T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what you're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride. All
right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, Kith. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Breaking news, everybody. Annie Fry community got some breaking news. And since I'm the backup guy and the fill-in guy, Ryan, what's the breaking news?
This is so breaking that it was posted within the last 15 seconds.
Just now.
I'm refreshing it. There it is. Okay.
We now know the results of the baby pool. Is that how we want to frame this? So Annie Fry, who you might know from the Annie Fry Show here noon to three, just had a baby. And born, I'm reading this with you, so yeah. Mm-hmm. Born 12:44 p.m., that would be
yesterday,
so we're just finding out about all this. 9 pounds, 15 ounces, almost a 10-pounder.
Wow.
Wow.
No wonder she was saying, get this baby out of me. And her husband's saying, yeah, we need to get this kid on the football team.
Well, it's a girl.
She? Yeah.
And you want to know the name?
That doesn't matter anymore.
Because we didn't know that. I didn't know the name.
Right, I didn't
all.
Either.
Nobody did. I don't think she shared it with anybody. Maybe Katie, but then Katie would have to be lying because I think she said she didn't know. But maybe. The name was Molly. Molly Marie Fry.
Molly Marie Fry. And you can find out all this information and a picture of mother, father, and baby at the Annie Fry Show Facebook page.
As of just now.
I mean, it literally posted about a minute ago.
She was waiting till we went on the air.
Thank you.
Last second. Thank you.
And what's really important is that everybody is healthy.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's healthy, and according to the picture, everybody's smiling, so everybody's happy. At least at that moment in time, they are.
Exactly. All right, there it is. So check
out
the.
They all look great, actually.
Yeah, they really do. Yeah, look at the Annie Fry Show, Facebook page, and you can see that picture right there of Annie and her husband and little Molly. That's
little
great.
Little Molly, little Chubkin's cheeks.
That's right.
At 9 pounds 15 ounces.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's great. Right. Congratulations, Fry family. All right, I'm Mike Ferguson in for Annie. Obviously, it's a 12:10. A little bit later on today, here's what we've got kind of on the agenda. Late night host James Corbin.
Corden.
I'm sorry, I don't watch his show. So yeah, James Corden. I've seen him in some commercials and stuff for like coffee pots or something like that. And yeah, he does.
And you've seen the carpool karaoke.
I've seen the carpool karaoke stuff. Yeah. So there's a petition saying he is culturally insensitive because he does a comedy bit, and so instead of just turning off the channel, they're going to petition him to say stop doing those jokes. We petition you, and they're serious because they do an online petition and they forward it on email. So they are serious about that. I'll tell you what that's all about as well here. Here in a couple minutes here, interesting case on the Missouri side. Should somebody cut in line when they're requesting clemency from the governor? Well, there's actually evidence that maybe he should.
Okay, can we talk about this?
Yeah, exactly.
Because You were filling me in. I hadn't heard this story, but it's a big story in Western Missouri, apparently, right?
It is.
But it's here, Kansas City.
Right. So here's what happened. Over 40 years ago, a guy by the name of Kevin Strickland, and I had to look it up, too, because that's obviously long before I ever got into media or anything like that. He was one of three people who were convicted of a brutal triple murder.
What year was it again?
It was 1978.
Okay.
Whoa.
And he was, you know, early 20s at the time. Three people.
He's been in jail the whole time.
He was convicted along with two others, and he's been in prison ever since. Well, he's, you know, appealed. He's maintained that he was innocent, along with most, probably every other convict out there.
Sure. It's a pastime.
Here's the difference. Is that after a Kansas City Star story investigation to it, the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office, which prosecuted him back in the 70s, they looked at the evidence and now they say they're right. He shouldn't have been convicted. Not only is there question about his guilt, they have said he's innocent. He didn't have anything to do with it. He should have never been prosecuted. He should have never been convicted. The federal prosecutor, the Western District of Missouri, they looked into it as well, and they've come to the same conclusion. This guy should be let out of prison yesterday.
In 1979.
Right. 1979. Yeah, the murders happened in 1978. The Jackson County presiding judge said the same thing, said that this was a miscarriage of justice. And so Kevin Strickland has applied for, applied for a full pardon.
Now before we get to the meat, the right. climax of the story here, because that's the interesting part.
Yeah.
Why did this come up? Was it did a podcast and focused on his case? Like, why did this suddenly happen?
He's been maintaining this for a long time, and there's a lot of people do that. There's been a few people that have been active, but it was the Kansas City Star report. Oh,
so the newspaper looked into it
right.
randomly? I mean, they just...
Well, they probably reacted to some activism in the area.
Okay.
The most damning piece of evidence was an eyewitness statement. And in 2009, she recanted.
Yes.
So yeah, even 30 years later.
That's 2009. I think
exactly.
That's what I'm saying is like, why now?
Why did it take 10 years?
Because there are how many thousands of cases like this are all happening. But go ahead. That's I was just curious.
But so we're putting up that there's a lot of red flags here, a lot of evidence. So this all happens. It's getting a lot of media attention on the other side of the state. So Governor Parson is being asked about this because at this point, he's the one who has the power to pardon him or not. There are some people who will say, well, if it was a miscarriage of justice, then the Jackson County Court can just kick it. Well, no, he was sentenced to life in prison. It was actually a capital case. He was sentenced to life in prison. And so they can't just go, oops, and legally say, sorry, Kevin, here you go. Here's the door. You know, good luck finding an apartment. That's not how that works. And so Governor Parson was asked about this, and he said, I'll get to it. His request when I get to it, there's about 3,000 clemency requests right now. And he's quoted as saying, when something like that comes up, we look at those cases. But I don't know that necessarily makes it a priority to jump in front of the line. We understand some cases are going to draw more attention through the media than others, but we're just going to look at those things. And then he went on to say he was tried by a jury of his peers and found guilty. And he said that he does understand there's a lot more information out there. Here's my take on this. And if you disagree, I'm welcome to hear it. 314-241-9797 or 866-455-9797. The governor says everybody requests clemency. Most of the time that somebody's saying, I've changed, give me a second chance.
Okay.
Or they're okay. In this case, you've got the actual office that prosecuted and put him behind bars saying this was wrong. He's actually innocent. To me, that says at least move it to the front of the line or close to it and have your counsel look at it, your lawyers, have the attorney general look at it, and at least review it as quickly as you can, because there is a chance that this is and actually looked up the numbers. This would be the longest, if it turns out that he truly is innocent and he's exonerated, this would be the longest false imprisonment in the state of Missouri's history.
Well, first of all, Governor Parson, I like that he says, well, you know, there's a lot of people requesting.
Right.
I can't, just because you're giving it media attention doesn't mean there's not a whole lot of people ahead of you in line that I have to get to. So I get that. I respect that. But what else needs to happen for this guy? Because you said the prosecutor, the county, the judge,
the
whoever,
feds,
pretty much everybody involved has said this is wrong.
Yeah.
So what else needs to happen before we know that that's right?
And the other two people convicted said from the beginning, yeah, this guy didn't have anything to do with it. We did it. You got us. You caught us.
And Carl, you said that somebody came forth in 2009 and said...
The biggest part of their case against him was this woman saying, oh yeah, it was him. He was there.
And she recanted.
Right.
And so that's when the Innocence Project got involved, and they went and dug deeper into the story. And it's taken this long just to get to that point. But the way that the Missouri's laws are written, the only person that can let this gentleman out of jail is the governor.
Right.
So are we in a situation where the governor, he needs to hear more before he can say absolutely? Well, or is he just saying, no, there's a lot of people ahead of you?
Right. I mean, he's just saying there's a lot of people ahead of you. They've got their appeals in. They've got their clemency request in. And it's not fair for you just to jump. I say it is fair for him to jump in line.
Well, he's going to sue the state.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
we're already going to give him a lot of money.
You know what? And if
that he deserves.
Yes, thank you. That's what I was about to say is if this turns out to be true, you better believe he should sue. And even though I'm a taxpayer in Missouri, he'll deserve it.
Because we did this to him.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree with you and disagree with the governor on this one.
Yeah.
It does seem as if, yes, there's a lot of cases ahead of you, but unless all of them have all proven as much as this case has, there's a lot of people that have done a lot of due diligence to prove that this guy is innocent. That, to me, says jump him in line ahead of all the people who are just basically saying, well, I want to get out.
Right. Oh, precisely. and the thing is, I'm not even arguing that Governor Parson should give him a full pardon. I'm saying that the guy should get his request to jump in front of the line, let the governor's legal counsel, let the attorney general's, like I said, legal counsel, whoever it is that wants to look over these cases and the apparently evidence of this. And if they look at it and say, no, we disagree. We think this was a good conviction. Okay. Then go back to the line. But when you've got this
when
many...
When the prosecuting attorney says, we screwed up.
Yes.
Well, if everybody's saying
saying that, yeah. And so that, to me, means that the governor should absolutely say, we're gonna cut in front of the line. The guys and the gals who were, you know, the next 5 or 10 that I was going to get to, sorry, you're going to wait a little bit longer. But we have credible evidence that needs to be considered, because if this is true, every single day is another injustice. And all of us should, when we look at our criminal justice system, we should be focused on this absolutely cannot continue. The old adage, it's better to let, 10 guilty men go free than one innocent man convicted and jailed. I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
Justice is blind.
Yeah. And if that could be the case, you can't worry about the lawsuit, because he'll do it and he'll get it and he'll deserve it and I won't have a problem with it.
It's been 41 years, 11 months, almost 42 years.
42 years. Now, I mean, by comparison, I'm 49 years old. I mean, that's...
You know what surprises me is that the governor's the only person who can pardon him. I guess that makes sense.
Because he's already been through the appeals process.
Mm. Are there other states that have different laws? I mean, that seems like it would be the norm that the governor is the only one, just like the president's the only one that can pardon people of federal crimes.
Right.
But if there are 3,000 people waiting in that line, it seems like you could sort of hire somebody who's lieutenant governor or something to kind of work through that a little faster. Because it sounds like they're backing up.
Lieutenant governor doesn't have a lot to do.
I would think.
The lieutenant governor's job is to keep breathing in case the governor doesn't.
Yeah, right.
That's the lieutenant governor's job.
Right.
Peter Kinder, he was lieutenant governor for so long, and then he tried, and if he would have just stayed one more term, he would have been governor.
He would have been governor, which was Peter's goal the whole time. I like Peter Kinder. He actually would have been a good governor, I think. But in this case right here, I understand, Mike Parson. I like Mike Parson. I've known him for a long time. He's very law and order. He's a former sheriff. He's a former military guy. He says, this is our process. This is our procedure. We're sticking to it. We can't change it every time somebody else says something. But I just think these circumstances say, no, change it.
I would agree with you.
Yeah. All right. If you have some thoughts on it, 314-241-9797 or 866-455-9797. Should this case cut in line ahead of maybe 3,000 people? I say yes. Ryan says yes. What do you say? And once again, if you want to see that picture posted minutes ago of Annie Fry and the new little baby Fry.
Molly.
It is
Molly.
On the Annie Fry Show Facebook page right now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And I know this is political, but it's not necessarily about politics and all that sort of thing. But it's a matter of not just fairness, but it's a matter of justice, which are two kind of different things. And when we debate all of these things about criminal justice reform, which we've got prison reform and police reform and all these sorts of things, this case that we're just talking about with this before Governor Parson now, to me, jumps out and says it's not even just about Kevin Strickland, although it is, because there's a chance he was wrongly convicted. It's also about, do we back up what we say, not just as conservatives and libertarians, but in society, to say absolutely we are in favor of justice, law, and order. And if something goes wrong, we need to fix it right away. I'm Mike Ferguson. By the way, it's 1227. So if you're just joining us, give me a call, 314-241-9797. You can also call me at 866-455-9797. The case is in Missouri. A man was convicted 42 years ago, Carl.
Almost 42 years ago.
And the prosecuting attorney's office, Jackson County, and the local federal prosecutors, Western District, and the county presiding judge all responded to an Innocence Project investigation and a Kansas City Star report, looked into the case, and now say, oh my goodness, this guy's innocent.
And when I said almost 42 years, it's 2 weeks from being 42. It's not like we're rounding up that much.
I was surprised. Like, I don't see why it would be a problem to jump this guy in line a little bit. Although we did have a call on the break who said, no, I completely disagree. It's just like triage. It's whoever shows up first. But even in triage, now that I'm talking about it,
you take the most important. You take the most important. Critical
case. So he was agreeing.
Yes.
Ultimately.
He was agreeing. He said, this guy has a stake. He has a tree branch through his chest, and we need to get it out right away.
That's a great way to put it. And Governor Parson has said, well, I'm going to do this, you know, in line. There are thousands of people who've applied for clemency before him. We'll get to it when I get to it. Just because some people have said he's innocent, that doesn't mean he jumps in line. I think with this level of official review of his case, should jump him in line.
You know what's crazy as you're talking about this? I'm realizing, you know, we talk politics every day.
Right.
And social issues and whatever. And, you know, we also goof around a little bit. These kind of stories, 10, 20 years ago, this used to be what we debated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now we debate stuff like, can I say I'm a boy? Like, stuff that you're like, what has happened? Like, these to me are the kind of debates that in a healthy society, you talk through and you figure out solutions. But I know I'm kind of going off the deep end, but we've gone off the deep end.
I like where you're going with this because it's true. It's a good way to reflect not just on whether or not we are a society that pursues justice, but are we a society that's losing any common sense in our priorities?
It also shows, Ryan, that we've not moved on because we're still talking about the stuff that we would have talked about 20 years ago.
Well, in a way, but I mean, these are issues that come up, you know, like you can't solve all of these ahead of time. These are just things that happen.
Happened.
So it's the kind of thing that you're sort of, you know, this is the kind of thing that when I hear it, I think, well, this is a good debate. This is a good debate to be having, and I think oddly on this one we're all on the same side.
Mm-hmm.
So you know it seems as if we're Mike, apparently you're friends with Governor Parson, so you're going to call him afterwards and say, "Listen, we're hammering you on the radio, buddy."
We've known each other through. He's been on a variety of my shows. I've interviewed him back since he was in the legislature, so we're acquaintances. Let's put it that way.
And they are looking to change this law. There's going to be a bill in August that will let the judge that was in charge of the last version of the case be able to release some if this ever happens again.
Right. Right. See, yeah. Because those judges, I'm sure, are retired by now. But
well, exactly.
Part of that, though, even scares me because we know there's a lot of judicial activism.
Yes.
That what if you get your buddy elected to be the judge of your hometown?
Start releasing people.
And you're the guy who, you know, you're Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful
it's
Life.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, no, yeah. All of a sudden, I'm going to get my friend Mr. Potter out of jail. You know,
right.
Like that's one of the reasons you consolidate that to governor.
Here's the other problem with this. And I say problem, I don't mean with Governor Parson. I don't mean with Republicans, I mean Democrats, anything like that, is that something like this inevitably becomes political very quickly.
Yes.
And it shouldn't.
Mm.
There
right.
should be things that are above politics, that are above partisanship, that are above tribalism, and the quest for justice should be one of those things.
Right and wrong.
Which is hard to say because you're talking about the governor of the state who is either a Republican
inherently,
or Democrat.
Inherently
is obviously
political,
yeah. a political person with affiliations.
Right.
But you would think that a person that high up getting involved on a level like this,
mm-hmm.
that's not really a political decision.
It shouldn't be.
And it shouldn't be. But a local judge, it could be.
Yes.
Which is yes. kind of what bothers me.
And I, you know, I was talking about this with somebody else yesterday when I first saw the story, and I had somebody say, well, then they should just let him out and put an ankle bracelet on him and then sort it out.
Well, that's
like,
not
well,
justice.
That's not how that works.
Yeah.
You
and
know,
that's not fair to him. If he's actually innocent, why would he need an
right,
ankle bracelet?
Right. I mean, being outside of jail is better than inside of jail.
Yeah.
And honestly, life has changed. The world has changed in 42
oh,
years.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, he's actually quoted. Kevin Strickland is actually quoted as saying he wants nothing short of a full pardon and exoneration. So he's not asking that his sentence be commuted. Because I suspect there's a lot of people who would simply say, you know what, just get me out of here. I'll just take whatever I can get. And this guy is quoted as saying, through a full pardon, you have the power not only to correct my wrongful conviction, but also to ensure that my innocence is finally recognized. That's a fair demand.
That's fair.
If, in fact, he's innocent. And I'm not arguing they should let him out of jail. I am just arguing that he should get his case bumped to the front of the line.
Well, I would argue that they should let him out of jail. I mean, I don't know what other check and balances you need to sort of
yeah.
give the stamp to him. That
well, I just don't want the rest
innocent.
Of the process gone through so we know it's right.
Okay. But what other?
Isn't
what,
the rest of it
yeah,
just
what's the rest
Parson
of the process?
Saying you're out?
Well, but you know what happens is he and his staff, or his counsel, they review it. You know, they're you know,
what's
I mean,
there to review though.
They review what I guess the judge, and the prosecutor have said.
It's paperwork, probably
yeah, yeah.
right. And I'm saying 95%, maybe 99%, he absolutely should be let out of jail. But I haven't reviewed the cases. I don't have the evidence.
You
I just know it's
have
being
a-
reported.
An ounce of plausible deniability.
Not even yes. the plausible deniability. Just saying that you can respect the system and the process while at the same time rushing towards getting a just outcome.
True. Do you think Parson, you know, we're talking about this on the radio.
Right.
And we're in St. Louis. It's not Kansas City. Kansas City, this is a local story. It's not here.
Right.
Do you think that he, I don't want to say caves to the pressure, but do you think that he...
He already said no.
He already said no, but...
Right.
It's becoming a bigger story.
I don't think Governor Parson is somebody who caves to pressure. You know,
yeah,
he gets.
I
mean, you look at from you know every special interest group out there. A little bit later today, we've even got a story if we have time to get to it of the state workers union is really mad at the governor, and the governor is not even really giving him the time of day. He just doesn't really cave. I mean, you can agree with him or disagree with him, but he really doesn't cave. But what? Just the limited conversations I've had with Governor Parson over the years is that he is a guy who is driven by justice and law and order, especially with his background as a sheriff. And I think that if you appeal saying this is about law and order, this is about our process, this is about making sure that it is the right outcome. And if there was a bad outcome through corruption or incompetence or just a good old-fashioned mistake, law and order demands that this get addressed as quickly as possible.
I've had that conversation with Katie, actually, who will be back on Monday, and the live stream will be back on Monday. There's a plug for you. About about Governor Parson, kind of off air. Is that why you think that he, in my view of him, doesn't seem to be as much of a sort of pioneering governor like
yep.
Governor Abbott and DeSantis,
right.
excuse me, are? Like, they put themselves in harm's way.
Yes.
But he doesn't.
He
kind of goes with the flow. He's going with the right flow.
And that's been very good for Missouri, by the way. I mean, there are political decisions he's made that I just disagree with. But one, Mike Parson does not have aspirations for higher office.
Right.
He's not setting up to run for
and
president.
And those two you mentioned to do.
Yeah, he's...
Maybe. Yes. Well, DeSantis clearly does.
Yeah, and he's not running for Senate. But remember, when Mike Parson came in office was through the chaos of the Eric Greitens debacle.
Right, right.
And so he was the right personality to settle everything in, restore yes. order, confidence in our state. I mean, you look at the massive changes. We had, what, three or four statewide officers shift positions. A lieutenant governor to governor, state senator to lieutenant governor, you know, state treasurer to attorney general. I mean, we had all the... In many states, that would be an absolute implosion of the entire government. But Mike Parson saw that through.
Yeah, and it worked out fine.
It worked out very well. All right, let's see what Kyle has to say about this case here. Hey, Kyle, you are on the air. Should they move Kevin Strickland's case to the front of the line for review right away or leave him in his place in line?
Well, I kind of have mixed feelings about it. I think he can in line, but my real question is why did it take 41 years for three officials to suddenly say, oh, he's not guilty? I just think that's kind of, you know, I mean, that's a long time to be able to remember that case. And so I don't necessarily blame Parsons for letting it take its course and get to there because, I mean, what happened the last 41 years, you know? Why is it just now coming to the forefront?
I think that's a logical question. Appreciate that, Kyle. And the answer is because once a case is prosecuted and disposed of one way or the other, they just move forward, and the prosecutor's offices are asked by almost everybody to go back and review, just take another look, and they don't.
And that's what the appeals process is for.
Right, and then there's the appeals, and this has gone all the way through the appeals. And then you've got the difference here would be the Innocence Project and then the local media doing the report.
And the witness recanting.
Yeah.
In 2009. That really seemed to be the one that sped it up.
Yes. And that's still 11 years ago.
Right.
I appreciate the call, but the reverse logic could be true also of that caller, which is it took 41 years. Why wouldn't you jump him to the front of the line?
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like a reason to do that.
Right. All right. Still ahead here. This is going to be fun. You remember Liz Wheeler? She was one of the main anchors from One America News Network for a long time. Her Tipping Point show and her Final Point commentary, which, man, those things went all over social media. She's going to be with us just ahead. She's got some new projects in the works. We're going to find out what she's up to. She's kind of one of the up-and-coming conservative pundits who's, frankly, I think, more credible than some of the others that are out there on the network. So we'll talk to Liz Wheeler just ahead. I'm Mike Ferguson, in for Annie Fry.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
I love you so much that I and Annie Fry, understandably, taking a little time off because as of yesterday morning, she's got herself a new baby.
Oh, it was exactly 24 hours ago.
From right now,
yeah.
Wow.
And if you want to see a picture of Annie and her husband and their new baby, just go to the Annie Fry Show Facebook page. I'm Mike Ferguson. It is 12:43. You know, we talk a lot about culture wars, you know, whether it's cancel culture, whether it's, you know, social, sexual identity agendas, all of that sort of thing. But we often tend to do it in one of a couple ways, Ryan. One way, we're just talking about how crazy and insane this is. And we laugh about, you know, how things have changed over the years. Can you imagine when we were kids, if this were the case, it never would have been tolerated. We just kind of acknowledge how bizarre things have gone. Or we just get really mad at the way it's going.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, you remember from One America News Network for years, Liz Wheeler, host of Tipping Point. She's got a new online video podcast show, The Liz Wheeler Show, coming out. She joins us right now. And Liz, first of all, thanks for the time today. And secondly, your recent op-ed, I think, sounds like it's going to set the tone for some of the ways you're going to cover topics on your new show. The op-ed title, "To Win, Conservatives Must Admit We're Losing." We don't like to think of ourselves as losing because we're right, but we can be right and still lose, right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. First of all, Mike, thanks for having me today, and a huge congratulations to Annie and her family. What a blessing to have a new, brand new baby. my husband and I just had a baby as well this year. So it's a very exciting time. Yeah, and I think that's why we fight the fights that we do, right? Because we want to hand down the country to the next generation in better shape than what we experience now. But conservatives, for all of our good intentions, have spent the last 50, 60, 70 years playing defense on these culture issues. And I talk about the culture war specifically because you can't win a political battle until you've won the culture war, until you have public opinion on your side. And so culture wars are very important to fight, but conservatives have obviously lost. And I don't say this in any way to blame particular people. I just think, look at, you know, the Billboard charts, for example. You can see Cardi B's vulgar song WAP at the top. You can't really look at that and tell me that conservatives are winning here with conservative principles. And so we have to course correct. We have to say, okay, what we've been doing so far hasn't been working. The radical left now controls the cultural institutions like traditional marriage, the family, the public school system, the university system. And how do we reclaim and restore these institutions? And to do so, the first step is to say, well, playing defense isn't the way to go. We need to stop doing that and start playing offense.
Well, Liz, I couldn't agree with you more. My question for you is, you know, what is the solution then? How do we play offense? Is it done politically? Because it sounds to me like politics is sort of downstream from these cultural issues. So how do you win cultural issues without, you know, doing it politically?
Sure. So I think there's two good examples currently of arenas where conservatives have played offense on cultural issues, and it's resulted in not only a change of public opinion, but then secondarily, it's resulted in legislative changes. So let me run through one of the examples with you. And what I'm talking about is abortion and the pro-life message. After Roe v. Wade was passed, there was actually widespread support for legal abortion in the United States. The pro-life movement decided not to fight it legislatively at the beginning. They decided to fight it culturally to get popular opinion on their side. And we've spent the last 30, 40 years just posing to people the idea, the question of scientifically, when does life begin, to have them answer that question in their minds, and then asking them to justify that with the reality of the abortion procedure. What does the procedure actually do and what does it look like? Because obviously you and I know that those two things cannot be morally justified, right? That if life begins at conception, we have no right to brutally end that life in the womb. And the pro-life movement has, you know, been extremely vigilant about fighting this culture war. They have not compromised with the left. They've not played by the left's rules. They have just gone directly to the people to win public opinion. And the result is now public opinion is on the side of the pro-life movement. 80% of people in our country, pro-life and pro-abortion, think that abortion should be banned in the third trimester. 60% of people in our country think abortion should be banned in the second trimester. So we've slowly won this cultural battle over the course of a couple decades, and it's translated to this year alone. There have been over 500 bills in state legislatures introduced that are pro-life bills. 61 of those have become laws at the state level just this year alone. First, you win the cultural battle by not backing down, by championing reality. Then it'll translate legislatively.
Hey, Liz, let me ask you then, what's the next round? What are the priorities we should be pushing back on culturally, whether it is through legislation and politics or whether it is that, you know, engaging people on a heart-to-heart or a mass communication scale, kind of in that strategic vein that you just mentioned with abortion?
Two things, I think. I think the public school systems, and this is one that we're in the middle of this battle right now, right? We see the teachers' unions being anti-science in their recommendations about masking children and, you know, issuing these very radical leftist demands in exchange for taxpayer money funding failing public schools. We see critical race theory being taught. We see all kinds of terrible indoctrination happening. We see leftists against school choice, which benefits every child and every family. So the public school system has an enormous role in our country right now, shaping the next generation. And we ought to go really hard. We ought to play offense and not play defense. And we shouldn't back down. We should be very unapologetic fighting to make sure that the radical leftist ideology isn't disseminated and in our public schools, that our kids aren't being brainwashed. At the same time, Republicans, politicians at every level, local, state, and national, ought to be championing the family. Because regardless of what you think spiritually, regardless of what you think ethically or morally or anything of that nature, and what I'm talking about is gay marriage versus traditional marriage, right? So regardless of your feelings on that, it's simply a fact that children who are raised by a married mother and father are 82% less likely to live in poverty. So if we are right now using government as this enormous welfare system and trying to make sure, obviously, that children are not living in poverty, why would we turn to the government first when the most effective anti-poverty program ever designed is simply the nuclear family? Yet Republicans don't even talk about it.
Liz Wheeler is the host of the Liz Wheeler podcast, Liz Wheeler Show. Sorry. So these issues, that's actually what I wanted to ask you about. I'm glad you got into it, because when I think of cultural issues, I think of the two that you just brought up mainly. I think most people do, although there's a wide variety of them. But those two, abortion and then like the gender identity sort of sexual mores and folkways that we have in our society right now, those are the two kind of main cultural issues. You said that you think, and you provided evidence for this, but you think that it's possible to engage this society on a basis that does not involve spirituality. I have a hard time with that. As a host, when those issues come up, I immediately go to my faith, and you're saying, well, maybe that's not the right way to go.
Well, it depends. I mean, I'm likewise, just like you, and like I'm sure a lot of your listeners, my worldview is informed by my faith. I'm a practicing Catholic. I'm a Christian. And, you know, my bioethics and my moral code is informed by my faith. But there's secular arguments for all of the policies that we hold, all the principles that we hold, right? So abortion, for example, you can make a religious argument. Of course you can, that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, that God knew us before he formed us in the womb, that we're a soul from the moment of conception. Those are all spiritual arguments, and perhaps we should be using those with Christians and other people of faith. But there's a scientific argument as well that's completely secular, and that simply is, science says that the moment that a sperm fuses with an egg, new DNA is formed. Therefore, that new DNA, that new cell that's created, that new person that's created, is not a not person. There's no other moment except the moment of conception in pregnancy that changes something that is not a person into something that is a person. And if we're going to pick and choose which people have rights and which people are not protected by the law, then we're going to go down the slippery slope that our country has gone down before. And so I do think it's important when we're talking to people who don't share our worldview to think about the issues from the way that they think about it. Because ultimately, when your goal is to try to change hearts and minds, you're not just trying to impose your viewpoint on them. You're trying to say, even by the standards by which you live your life, the conservative principles will best serve you, right? And so I think that's a messaging mistake that a lot of Republicans have made in the past decade. They've tried to get people interested in topics or in viewpoints that they're not interested in, instead of meeting these potential voters at issues that the voter cares about and explaining how limited government, individual liberty, inherent God-given rights actually serve them best, regardless of what issue they care about.
Hey, Liz, let me ask you about, let's talk to the conservatives and maybe the small L libertarians out there who say, you're absolutely right, Liz, this is a culture war, it's going the wrong direction. I think we are losing, but they may be hesitant to want to get into the battle. They may want to say, listen, I'm for small government. I don't want government dictating culture whatsoever. I just want to disengage, walk away, and not participate whatsoever because they're wrong, I'm right. I'm just going to live my life by my values and my culture, and I'm going to keep it to myself. What's the argument to say, no, engage, push back? Because we know that if we get involved, we get called every name in the book. We get called, you know, a bigot. We get called a racist. We get called, you know, medieval thinking, you know, for any reference to faith and religion. You know, what's the reason somebody should say, okay, I'm going to go through that and step up and do it anyway?
Okay, so here it goes. It's selfish not to. And I don't say that again to be, I don't say that to be harsh. It's selfish not to, because we're in a position right now in our country where we have the option to not be involved. We have the freedom to just live our lives the way that we want. When government, sure, it's becoming more intrusive, but we can still live our lives the way that we want. If we don't fight, if we turn away and let other people battle this out, the radical left will win. And the result of the radical left winning is our children and our grandchildren won't have that choice that these small L libertarians that you describe are making right now. So if you don't fight, you are surrendering not only our cultural institutions to the left, but the future of our country to the future of our country to the left. And in my opinion, I mean, that's the wrong thing to do, but it's very selfish.
Is it changing, Liz, do you think? Have we hit the line where it's like even the people who didn't want to get involved are now saying reluctantly, okay, I got to get in the battle?
I think so. Look at the critical race theory battles in school boards across the country. I mean, this has just swept the nation.
Yeah.
People who didn't even know who their school board members were, people who were disinterested in politics in general, are going to these school board meetings. They're running for school board themselves. I mean, these parents who just wanted their child to have a decent education are stepping up and saying, you know what, if you're going to be indoctrinating my child and telling my child that, you know, they're reduced just to the amount of melanin in their skin, I'm not going to stand for that. I'm going to speak up in defense. And so, I mean, that's a good thing. I admire these parents so, so much for fighting for what's right, because it is difficult. As you mentioned before, it's not easy to be in this fight. No one ever said that it was. You will get attacked, but hopefully that's just a verbal attack, but you will get bullied. You will get called names. But at the end of the day, you have to decide, is that more important? Is my comfort more important than the future of our country? Or am I going to figure out how to tolerate and deal with the liberal, sometimes nasty liberal response in order to hand down my children a better country than we're seeing right now?
All right, Liz, we've got about a minute or so left. The Liz Wheeler Show, how do we find it and what can we expect when we do?
Yeah, definitely. You can go to LizWheelerShow.com to see. It's basically on all podcast platforms. I always ask people, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and a glowing review, because that helps us climb up the charts, which means more people will discover reality. We're hoping to be a little bit different than other political pundits. We're going to be champions of reality, kind of show people how this is done, how the culture war can be won. We're not going to back down. And I'm also going to give people action items for a lot of these issues so that you don't have to feel hopeless in between casting your ballot every 4 years. You can take action on these things almost every episode when we talk about them. So go to LizWheelerShow.com to see, and please subscribe.
All right. That's easy enough. LizWheelerShow.com. Liz, really appreciate the time. Have a great weekend, and congratulations to you and your husband as well for your new one.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Once again, that was Liz Wheeler. I think everybody remembers her from all the time on One America News Network. And so she's branching out on her own, got that new program. I'm going to check it out.
You know, I don't disagree with anything that she says, but I specifically asked her the question about, you know, how do you address cultural issues as a Christian in a way? Yeah. I mean, I don't think I said as a Christian, but
Through the lens of your faith.
Through the lens of your faith. And I don't disagree with her answer, which is that if you're trying to change somebody's mind politically, that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, having spiritual conversations is more fun and enjoyable and impactful. So
I think you just have to know your audience.
You got to go know who you're talking to and why.
You may take a while to get somebody from point A to that point B.
Yeah.
You know, that's so maybe it's not an either or type of thing. All right. Okay. What do you think? 314-241-9797 or 866-455-9797. Oh, boy. Jeffrey Toobin is back on.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of morals.
Yeah.
We'll do that next hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.